The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
This is Comics League International, and we're kind of quasi taking a break from comics to talk. We're gonna talk some other genre material, and it's I don't know why I'm coy sometimes about what we're talking about because it's right there in the feed. So unless
they already know,
like unless they're like no, let me cover up my screen. I want to relish the surprise. How are they gonna tease it out there? And with me today, my boon companion and, compared to me, awesomely successful author is Mr. G. Derek Adams.
That's me. It's all relative.
We are who's the biggest kid in the neighborhood. That's all I'm saying. And right now, you're winning. You're winning.
You can that feeling pushes you to strive harder and write faster. Then it's fine.
It just pushes me to drink, and that's the problem. Screw you, Derek. pass me the whatever I have in the cabinets at the time. Fermented apples. That's all I have. So yeah, we're gonna talk about, you know, if you listen to our last little talk, which was on the awesomeness that was Captain America: Civil War. It was told there. We're gonna talk about some Ghostbusters 2.
We're gonna do a sort of a commentary, right? We're gonna watch the film and just sort of discuss it.
And just sort of discuss it as it goes. I actually have no idea why you wanted to talk about Ghostbusters 2.
Oh yeah, we were recording. I don't think we were recording. You and I were just talking about how a lot of it's like fashionable, or maybe it's just a thing that everyone hates this movie and talks about how it's bad and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and we're both like, I like this movie, and you're like, yeah, I kind of like it too. And we're like, hey, let's watch it and talk about that we like it. Because normally on these things we get very super, like, admittedly we're going to be critical. Like, it's not a great movie. Like,
no,
it's not as good as the first one.
It really isn't.
But like, it was one of those, I randomly watched it on TV a few months ago, like bits and pieces of it, and I was like, hey, I really like this part. I like this movie. Yeah. Why do people hate this? Because that's the word, they hate it. Like people hate this movie.
They're like, oh, this movie's terrible. It's blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and it's like this weird thing that because the sequel is not as good as the first one, like, it's an offense.
Yeah.
It offends you. It's like, it's just not, it's fine. Like, it's just...
Yeah, and I don't really get that. Like, I don't see why it should be. It's not offensively bad. I mean, there's movies out there that are sequels that are offensively bad, but this is it's charming. It's cute. I like it. It's got its problems. Admittedly, it has been like, I think, a good decade since I've seen Ghostbusters 2. So maybe when we finish watching, I'll just be in tears going, Derek, I don't like it. I tried, but I just don't.
Okay.
Where did the joy go? Which is always possible. But, you know, I mean, of some people, some jaded, cynical individuals might think we're trying to cash in on all the Ghostbusters remake joy, hate, bile?
All of the above. Just,
yeah.
Just gnashing of teeth.
Yeah. I mean, now I've watched just to kind of get it out there so people, you know, can kind of see where we're coming from. I have seen the first trailer of the Ghostbusters. The is it Paul Feig? Feige?
Yes.
I don't know how it's pronounced. Yeah, because there's a
Feige.
It's really hard because the guy who's in charge of the Marvel movies is spelled almost the same way, but I think there's an extra E, and that means one is like Mitzapitalik and one is Mitzapliklik. And right, I just can't remember which one is which, you know. But I don't know, from that trailer, I'll be honest, I was not overly impressed with the tone and the humor that seems to be in that movie, but it's a trailer.
Yeah. I think I watched the first trailer. I know I didn't watch the second one. Everyone's like, oh, the second one's better, or the second one's worse, or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I've tried to think about, like, I thought about the trailers for Bridesmaids that came out. If I don't know if you remember, like, that movie's really funny, but the trailers were not great. Like, they were just kind of like, here's the concept. Yeah, Here it is. Here's some broad stuff from it.
I haven't seen any of his movies, so I mean, you know, part of it is because I live in Japan, and I hear about a movie, I'm like, oh, okay, and then, like, it doesn't come out here until 6 months to a year later, and unless I hear continuous buzz, it's just easy to forget about it.
Bridesmaids is funny.
Is it?
It is very funny.
Because I remember...
Yeah, Kristen Wiig, like half the cast in this movie is from that movie. Like Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy, is that her name?
Yeah.
They're super funny, and like, I'm not like some people. I know there's been all this furor online. I'd be like, you ruined my childhood, and how dare you? And
yeah, because now that they're making, you know, remake of Ghostbusters, obviously step one is to track down every version of the original Ghostbusters.
Yeah, and
set it on fire.
Like, never existed.
Yeah,
like
never
existed.
It's really going to be sad when they kill Ernie Hudson. I mean, that's just...
He's just kind of been waiting for death.
Ever since The Crow.
It's been a long time since The Crow and Oz.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Those residual checks only go so far. Why did we suddenly just come up with, like, a fan fiction of sad Ernie Hudson for no reason?
You know, I bet you somewhere Ernie Hudson's just driving around, and he just got his little Ernie Hudson sense. He goes, you know what? Fuck you guys, I'm really happy.
I bet those guys are talking shit about me again.
I'm Ernie goddamn Hudson. My life is good.
So, I don't put too much stock in trailers, honestly, especially for big budget. We want a lot of people. Like, I like the people in it. I'm not opposed to the concept. Like, you know, doing it all with girls, awesome, cool.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'll just wait and see it. Like, I want to see it. I'm excited by the concept. I may not love it when I see the movie.
Yeah.
But I may just as well love it. So, I'm keen on the idea. It'd be really cool if I went and saw the movie and they like pulled a fast one and it's actually a remake of the other Ghostbusters cartoon.
Like the word gorilla shows up.
Yeah. With the talking gorilla and everything.
Yeah.
But I'm like I said, I'm not too stressed out about the trailer and all the man boy tears because someone touched a thing that you thought was yours and
it's mine. I own it. Honestly, like, my biggest disappointment about that movie, so far, it's been this. Like, when they said, hey, we're doing Ghostbusters 2, there are some people on the internet who acted like people on the internet.
The Ghostbusters reboot, not Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Okay. About the reboot is, and this happens a lot of times whenever people start discussing things on the internet, is you got a group, a very loud group, who, if something doesn't go exactly the way they want it, they kind of stomp and fuss and do that, which, it's the internet. Like, the golden rule of the internet is don't read the comic section, or the comments, and then, like, now it seems that there's people involved with, the remake, who are now kind of can I say, like, going very strongly in the opposite direction of anyone who has had anything to say about this movie that's negative are obviously, you know, inferior, dumb.
I mean, I see what you're saying. I mean, that's natural to like that. They hear all this garbage, so that anyone that has a legitimate criticism is just lumped in with all the garbage people that just hate it because it's women doing a thing that I don't like. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I hear you on that.
And I mean, admittedly, they are kind of in a lose-lose position, but it is kind of like, man, I don't know, like, you know, I've never been in a position where several million people on the internet all called out for my blood.
One day.
Oh, I can only hope. So I don't know how taxing that is, but, you know, like, I don't know, when the response is kind of like, if you don't like this, you're obviously a mouth breather. I don't know, I will admit that that does hurt me, someone who's like, I've seen the first trailer and that's all I really know, and tonally it doesn't excite me as a movie. It's kind of like, you know, I've rambled enough about that. People know what I'm saying.
It's your contrarian ways.
It's, yeah, yeah.
What do you mean? I'm not allowed to not like it. Well, I'm definitely not gonna like it. I'll show you.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, why don't we just have a little movie there?
Why don't you just make a film?
Just enjoy the movie.
Why don't you just bust some ghosts?
Yeah, are we above just busting ghosts nowadays? I thought that was what we wanted to do. Because I know who I'm going to call. Do you remember your first time, you know, watching Ghostbusters 2?
I don't.
Tell us your first time, Derek. Tell us your first time story.
Okay. It was very awkward. It's one of those movies that I would watch. Like Ghostbusters or Ghostbusters 2, like I would watch over and over as a kid. And so not as much Ghostbusters 2 as Ghostbusters 1, but it was one of those movies that I watched plenty when I was a kid. But when I wasn't really like watching it consciously, I was just kind of like absorbing it all in one whole hog, just watching it, not watching it critically, all that kind of thing. And so, like I said, I have lots of good memories of this movie. Like, there's certain scenes, and when we get to them, we watch the movie, I'll talk about them. Like, there's scenes that are, like, I really love that I have fonder memories of than I do of the first movie. You know that, like, I just really love this one scene. I think it's super cool for no reason. There's no reason why I love it. It's probably from some half-remembered, like, way, like, it made me laugh or something when I was... I don't know how old I would have been. Like, I don't know, 11 or whatever when I watched it the first time. But yeah, it's been interesting. Like, I've watched it a couple times in the past few years, just when it was on TV or what have you. And I've always watched it and been like, yeah, I like this movie. Why do people hate on it so much? And when, like, I've talked to people, like our mutual friend Steven, like, really doesn't like this movie. And so I talked to him a little bit yesterday and got a little bit of his stuff as some insight.
Yeah, yeah.
And his main beef, which I think is fair, he doesn't think the villain works. Like, he doesn't think the villain is scary, and he doesn't think any of the ghosts are presented in a scary manner in the second movie, whereas in the first movie, all the ghosts are played straight. They're played as horror creatures. And in the second movie, they're much more cartoony.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, that's a fair criticism.
I did some research, so as we get in the movie, I'll kind of get into that.
Oh, delightful.
For me, like, I can't even remember if this is true, or if this is just how I remember it. But I'm pretty sure I watched this movie in the theaters with my grandfather and brother.
Okay.
And okay.
I saw it in the theater, too. Yeah. I think so.
I did not double-check the date, so I could be completely making this up or getting it confused with something else, but I think we had to choose between Ghostbusters 2 or Home Alone. And I elected for Ghostbusters 2, and you know what? If that was indeed the case, I still think I made the right choice.
Yes.
I think I do prefer Ghostbusters 2 to Home Alone.
So both of us are kind of coming into this with generally benevolent feelings toward the film.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, neither of us are right. Like, I've watched it. I'm still pretty familiar. You're kind of hazy.
I read the novelization.
Whoa.
Yes, I had the novelization.
But you're hazy on the film. You haven't watched the film in a while.
I haven't watched the film probably in about 10 years.
Okay. It's probably been like I watched parts of it like a few months ago, and I probably watched it all the way through like a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Just for context.
Okay. Well, should we start getting
for all those internet scholars who are going to absorb everything we say about them?
Hey, this is Brent. I'm recording this a little while after Derek and I did the recording. So it actually took us several tries to get this lined up. We had some technical difficulties and finally managed a way to share screens and watch Ghostbusters 2 at the same time. So, but when we went back and restarted again, I thought we had done a nice little intro up until the moment we started playing, but in the end it just turned us going, as a grumpy, grumpy, screen not working, and then failing. And there was only like 5 seconds of manageable dialogue after this point, really. So, but we want people to know when to start watching the film if you're playing the home game along with us. So you can go ahead and start up your Ghostbusters 2 copy in 3, 2, 1, bussum ghosts. You know, whenever I see the old movies, like, what do you call these? Like, the startup screens? The Columbia Pictures? It just makes me feel somehow like a kid again. Like, a little bit more excited more than when I see the new ones.
Yeah, like when you see the Orion one or the one with the TriStar Telepictures with the Pegasus.
Yeah. Now, what is it, the Columbia one that also sometimes looks like Annette Bening?
Maybe?
Yeah. So we got our first pink slime. I wonder if that'll be important later.
Hmm.
You never know.
I do like that when this movie starts, all you get as lead-in is like, it's 5 years later. If you just watched Ghostbusters, it's been 5 years. Enjoy.
Yeah. And the charm that is New York City. We got people fighting with cops. We got random runners. Just everyone seems so hostile.
Mm-hmm. And we kind of talked about this before. I really like the first act of this movie,
mm-hmm.
and I really like the second act of this movie. The third act is where I think people have, like, it's kind of cool to hate on this movie, but most of my criticisms do fall in the last act of this movie. Yeah.
See, like, it's going to be interesting to kind of watch through this because all I have are, like, distant memories of the movie itself and of, like, the novelization.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so like I can't even remember what exactly I liked and what exactly I didn't like, because some of the stuff I thought was neat I think got cut out of the movie.
Huh.
Like the because all the scenes of like Ray and Winston doing like birthday parties and stuff like that, that's not in the actual movie, right?
No, that's in the movie.
Is it?
It's like the next scene, man.
Oh, man. Then I'm just getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where your mind has inserted scenes from the book and also confused what's in the book. You know what I want to say right here at the beginning of this movie?
Yes.
This baby is the most unattractive movie baby in cinema history. Could they not have found a cuter kid? Come on. Like, he's like the ugliest baby that has ever babied.
That's... And all I've seen him is in the like the baby parka, so I don't want to weigh in on his cuteness factor yet.
I'm taking a strong stance.
You know,
they could have afforded a cuter baby.
I've got a 1 year old myself, and my baby's damn adorable. So I'm pretty sure I'll see this baby, and he'll just pale in comparison. You know, and that's that is obviously not parent ego whatsoever.
No.
We use science. We use science to determine our baby's adorable.
See, I really like how the first time you watch this movie, you're like, okay, you know, you see them come up and you're kind of picking up that the Ecto-1 is in bad repair and stuff like that. But it's only this, they do this, like, yeah, it's cheesy, the moment where you're like, oh, they're here to bust some ghosts, but actually they're here because it's a kid's birthday party, and it's the most depressing moment of the movie. But I like it. I think it's clever.
I mean, and
He-Man!
In a way, I kind of think, like, this, as adults, probably speaks to us. I don't want to say more than other people, but as, you know, I mean, we both want to be something we are attempting to be. You know? Like, we both have our day jobs, but then you're making really big strides in, like, the writing world and independent world like that, and, like, acting, and I'm kind of falling behind you in that, although the acting isn't really possible here in Japan, but I know I felt like this doing some of the other side jobs I've had to do, of like, oh, okay, I just kind of smile and
oh, this is even worse. This is taking your moment of greatest glory, and it's been turned into a shameful minstrel show.
Ooh.
Where you're trying to scrape by. Yeah, and like, this is such good exposition. Like, they say, yep, everyone sued us, as would happen in reality.
Yeah.
I always really liked that.
And it also, it really, it follows up incredibly nicely off the last movie, where you had two main threats in the last movie, right? You had you had the evil ghosts, the ghost army, and then you had the lawyers.
Yeah, you had Walter Peck, or whatever, was the other main antagonist.
And apparently, in that 5 years, at least from now, Walter Peck won.
Yeah, the Walter Pecks of the world assembled and brought down
Peck United!
And I like that Egon got a day job, of course.
Yeah.
You know, back at the university. I like that.
Super, super smart. Super smart Egon.
Yeah. And also, like, the game that this first part of the movie is playing, where it's like, okay, you know what happened. You're meeting all the characters again. They're kind of where you would expect them to be.
Yeah.
But they make you wait to find out what happened to Vinkman.
Yeah.
And then when it happens, you're like, of course. Of course. I also like this little bit where they're setting up all the mood slime stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he's already experimenting with emotion and how it manifests in the physical world and all that stuff.
And even, you know, I didn't know if we should go into it right there, but even that first scene where you just see how aggressive people are, like, as she's walking through with the baby, right there, it's like, hey, this is New York and people are aggressive of the 80s, but...
You know. This movie, like, I feel like this movie, they were rolling so good.
Yeah.
And then they rolled that critical fail on a couple of key scenes. And it just all collapsed, you know? Because all this, like, you know me, like, I love Act One of movies.
Yeah.
Where they're, like, setting things up and just, like, all this interesting ideas. Like, once you know what's going on, it's never as good as when they're trying to figure it out. I love the process. I love processes. And I love fighting, I love training montages. You know this about me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we both share that joy of the training montage, which is, I mean, that's...
Look at those 80s toys in there. Oh, my God.
which is, I think, one of the reasons, like, another part that has that great feel in Ghostbusters 1 is it's not quite a training montage, but it's them, like, getting their shit together montage.
Oh yeah,
and that's great. And
my favorite lines of this movie is about to come up.
Uh oh. Should we pause?
No.
Should we wait for it? Just go through
it. It's coming. Right. Don't worry.
No, I won't.
Such a great Harold Ramis, like, Egon line.
Yeah.
Oh, here it comes.
Oh.
Let's see what happens if we take away the puppy. Yes.
He's such a mad scientist.
Oh, yes.
It would have been great to have him be, like, almost the crazy villain in some way, in, like, an alternate reality.
And, of course, Venkman became a schmaltzy TV host.
This could almost be right out of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, this sketch, this bit, yeah. And it's a natural progression from where he was at the beginning of the first Ghostbusters movie.
Yeah. It is kind of... It does feel like, yeah, he got offered that little job, or maybe like a few little personality pieces, and then he's doing it, you know?
It also has the same thing where the guy he's talking to is very earnest and is right. Like, he is accurately predicting the events of the movie, that the world's going to end this year, and he's giving him all this crap about, well, why didn't you say it was later so you could sell the book? And he's being very earnest and true. And then he's giving him all this grief. And then he's way nicer to the absolute wacko who's...
Now, where have we seen that before? I don't quite remember Venkman ever favoring, you know, ladies.
So she's a little frightening. Quite.
Yeah. Yeah,
she this is. I love little character actor moments like this actress. I don't know her name, but she's super. She's like in everything. She's one of the guy he was talking to too. They're both.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I recognize the guy a lot. The lady. I'm not quite sure if I recognize her as much.
Her face is super familiar to me from like 80s and 90s movies. She's sitting somewhere in a pile of money,
just collecting residuals from Ghostbusters 2.
Paramus. I remember as a kid, the word Paramus, like, hooked me for a few, like, weeks. Like, Paramus. Because I didn't know that was a place. I was like, Paramus. Mm-hmm. Like, I would just say it in my head all the time, because it just sniped me for a while.
Paramus is a place? I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Paramus, New Jersey.
Oh.
Because well, she keeps talking about the Paramus Holiday Inn or whatever. Yeah, Holiday Inn. Paramus. Such a fun word, Paramus.
You know, her face doesn't exactly ring any bells, but her voice really hits me. Like, I know I've heard that voice in several things and cartoons.
I can almost guarantee it.
Yeah.
Some kind of big lizard.
Which, you know, if you think about a big monster hijacking its way through New York City... You got lizards, you got marshmallow men.
Yeah, this bit with this is Peter Venkman saying, and he just touches his head. Ah, so good. Classic Murray.
And we have another little character actor, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
If we had been on the ball, we could have looked all this stuff up.
Nah,
yeah.
It's not really our gig.
Not really. I mean, you know. Oh, I love... This guy was in the pilot episode of News Radio. As, like, the guy who always quits and Dave Foley eventually had to, like, fire him. It's weird watching movies from the 80s and seeing how much younger everyone is.
Mm-hmm.
Although in some ways, Bill Murray hasn't changed as much as like some of the other people, you know?
Sure.
Like he still looks very much like...
The first appearance of Dragon Slayer in the movie. Everybody drink if you're playing the Dragon Slayer drinking game.
Whoop whoop. I didn't see Dragon Slayer until college.
Wow.
Yeah, it just did not enter into my life, and it's great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
he's great in this movie too. He's so ridiculous.
When is Peter McNichol not great?
There is no time that happens.
Yeah, like, I mean, he's admittedly, I fell into like Ally McBeal during the 90s when everyone loved Ally McBeal, but watching it back again, it's all about Peter McNichol and what's the guy's name? The guy who played the main boss. Richard Fish.
I don't know. I didn't watch a lot of that show.
He was one of the other guy was one of the original cast members of Assassins. The guy who played what, John Hinckley?
I don't know.
We're losing our theater cred. Oh no!
I know Victor Garber was in the original cast. Yeah. But I don't know who played Hinckley. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I want to say it's Greg something, but I don't know. But then again, I just blame everything on Greg's.
Stupid Greg.
Now, this is one
Let's talk about Viggo.
Viggo's frightening. I don't care what anyone says. He's frightening.
He's really scary until...
He needs to be scary?
Yeah, until he... I mean, spoiler, if this is your first time watching the movie. Until he takes over Rey at the end and he's big, puffy face...
Yeah, I don't really even remember that.
Oh, well, be prepared to be underwhelmed.
You spoiled it. You spoiled it.
Sorry.
Now, this was actually, going back to that last scene, that was one of the few things in the movie which confused me. And I think they kind of explain it later. But it was like, wait a minute. Dana went from a concert cellist... Mm-hmm. To a museum art restorer.
Yes, those are related fields, aren't they?
You know, when Boeing is really almost exactly like restoring art.
Yeah, that's one of those, like, you don't pay attention to it when you're younger, I guess, watching this movie. I mean, they always, you know, she's always coded as super classy in these movies, because she is, she's Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
But, so they wanted her to have a super classy job related to the museum. So I think they were just thinking that was the easiest way to get her.
I mean,
it doesn't make a ton of sense.
No, it doesn't. And it is one of those things of like, you know, okay, we know Viggo, and Vigo's going to live in a painting. So how can we get Dana to fall into contact with a painting? Oh, right. I know, it's this. And it's very much character following plot. You know, it's like we have the plot this, and we have, but we don't really know how to make our existing characters work into that.
And see, here she is playing the cello again.
Yeah. So it's like, I guess, well, my concert cellist, which is an easy job to just fall into, didn't quite work out, so I'm gonna...
I feel like there's a throwaway line later where she talks about how it gives her more time for Oscar... The baby?
Yeah. Which, I mean, Oscar the baby is kind of another little thing of like, well, it's kind of to show time has passed, but also it's basically a little pink MacGuffin.
Yeah. Now, though I do like that, you know, she was Venkman's love interest in the first movie, and then, like, this movie is all about what would logically happen after Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
She would logically get sick of his bullshit and move on with her life.
Yeah.
Like, yes, she still cares for him, and there's chemistry there, but she would move on with her life.
Yeah.
And she did, you know?
Yeah, she would not stick around too much for Elvis Venkman over there.
Yeah. I mean, I think this movie does a pretty good job. I mean, it's one of those, it's Bill Murray. You gotta love Bill Murray.
Yeah.
But also, like, I think they do a better job than a lot of films of, you know, there's the lovable scamp that the really classy girl's going to love because the movie requires it.
Yeah.
I think this movie does a better job of, you know, like, showing why she likes him and why their relationship didn't work and, you know, like, all that kind of thing.
You know...
This is a cute bit with the baby.
Yeah.
Like, testing
and stuff. No, I think the problem with the cuteness of this baby... I think it's got even for a baby, it's got kind of a bulbous forehead.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
like,
I agree.
If that baby would look really cute in a hat, and that's probably a terrible thing to say.
Look at that weird painting on the background of the dude with the beard.
And you know what? It kind of looks like Bill Murray with a beard. Like, think about some of the later features he's done where he's had that, like, big, bushy madman beard.
That's true.
I'm saying this movie... predicted the future.
I think this movie created the future.
Bum bum with slime.
God, this whole section of him talking about, like, I needed to be loved, I needed to be desired. Like, him being, like, I think about that all the time.
About Peter Venkman's need to be loved and desired.
No, like, just, like, silly, ridiculous demands in relationships.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, for real, you sucked.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm gonna go be charming with your child now.
Yeah, you basically said, like, I was keeping you down. I was pinning you up, and so I said, alright, fine, be free, you jerk.
Ah, what a great baby room. Look at that. Oh, look at that Triceratops.
Yeah, this kind of just makes me feel like a failure as a parent right now.
Yeah, you need to get on that.
I know. I mean, all we've really got is a baby fence. Like, that's basically a baby fence and like a little basket of toys and this whole, like, you can have one room decorated just for a baby.
This scene with Venkman and the baby, like, I refuse to believe this was scripted.
Well, I mean, he does have a reputation for
I had a slinky. Got a string.
It's cute. I mean, the slinky line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ouch.
That, see? He's ugly.
There you go.
It's right there.
There.
He's not attractive.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of interesting right there. It's the kind of joking way he is trying to find information about the husband without, you know, really knowing.
Mm-hmm. Though I'm pretty sure it's established that she married the dude she was kind of dating in Ghostbusters 1. The guy with the nose spray that was in the orchestra with her or whatever. Stool sample?
What?
See, I dig all this investigation. Yeah. I love it. We're investigating. Yeah. Makes me want to play Call of Cthulhu.
Ooh.
Let's investigate.
That would be fun.
Let's get to the bottom of this.
And walk through city.
Let's go to a library and read some things.
Yeah. Yeah. It goes pretty quick, doesn't it? Like, right now in the space of 20 minutes, we've shown that most of their lives have kind of been twisted. They're no longer the Ghostbusters. Some of them are just kind of almost depressing lives there. And now they're kind of, they got the band back together going through it. That's pretty good for 20 minutes.
Yeah, you've introduced the main villain, all the major characters, you've gotten the band back together, you've introduced the problem, and now we're right at the top of Act 2 in 22 minutes or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really tight. It's really good screenwriting. All the things are set up that are going to be important later. It's good stuff. Way to go, guys. Whoever wrote this.
Huzzah!
It's too lazy. Wasn't it Ramis and...
I think so.
Was it Ramis and Aykroyd that wrote this one?
Maybe.
We should really research things.
I thought you said it wasn't our bag. I thought you just said... Oh, that's true. You just said... You promised
I want to know who to yell at. I want to know who to yell at later.
Why don't you just yell at me, okay? Just let all your aggression out at me.
I have a lot of aggression I can let out.
But apparently none for Ghostbusters 2. Why do you lash out at those around
this movie?
Yeah. Thanks to the powers of IMDb, Ramis and Aykroyd. Wrote this.
Yeah. And here we go. Here begins the possession of Janosch. Look at that physical acting he's doing.
Yeah.
I think about that a lot now when I watch older movies and like Doctor Who and stuff, where there's lots of like, just act like you're being possessed and we'll draw some crap over you later.
So according to the IMDb trivia page, which I'm remembering this, not looking it up here, he was based partly on Vlad the Impaler.
Why didn't they just use Vlad the Impaler?
You know, I can kind of understand why not, because Vlad the Impaler, if you use that name, you'd have to spend a lot of time explaining that, like, no, he's not actually a vampire.
Not Dracula, but, like, yeah, I get that. Yeah. I get that.
You know, I mean, not exactly like that would take a huge amount, and it could actually be a nice little running gag. Mm-hmm. Like, wait, you mean the vampire? No, he's actually not a vampire. That could have been nice, yeah. But... I remember, like, as a kid, not really understanding that actors put on accents for movies.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
It just kind of seemed to me that, like, oh, well, if he's going to talk, like, wherever Peter McNichol's from. Is it mm-hmm. Migosh? I forget. I just think of him as Peter McNichol.
Okay. I think his name in the movie is Janosch.
Janosch?
Yeah.
He's
supposed to be from generic European place. You know, they never say where he's from.
But like that, oh, obviously that must be how he talks in real life. Like, what a great coincidence for him.
Finally, he got a part.
Man, like, yeah. And so I think when I saw Peter McNichol in, like, Adam's Family Values, and he was the camp counselor and sounded not at all Eastern European, I was like, wait, what? Yeah. I mean, even just the other day, I saw an interview with... Oh, crap. Now his name's going to escape me now that I need it. The guy who played Nightcrawler in X2.
Alan Cumming.
Yeah! Yeah, I saw an interview with Alan Cumming. And you know what? The guy's not American. He's not German. Like, he's
he lied to me!
All the damn time! He can't even teleport, that rat bastard!
That bastard, indeed.
But it was just like to hear him, and I forget if he's like from Wales or Ireland. This all is right. Not the Alan Cumming show, but it just kind of blew my mind to be like, oh, wow.
See, this is freaky when the slime starts reaching up trying to get him.
Yeah,
like this is scary. Ugh, it's gross.
And I liked how the tentacles don't all look uniform. Like yeah. Some have little claspers mm-hmm. on it. Some have little.
It looks a little bit like the Thing. You
yeah.
know? Explosion.
Very, very Cthulian.
Yes. Dimensional shambler, if you will. And I will.
Thank God they didn't wake up Sithagwa.
I like the idea that, like, one... They hit one cable, and they knocked out all of the burrow or whatever.
Yeah. Because, you know, reasons. That's how it works, right? Mm-hmm. The whole city is just wired up to one stack of pennies into a circuit breaker. I never would have spelled it with a Z at the end.
He does befuddled henchmen really well. Did you ever watch, speaking of Dracula, did you ever watch Dracula Dead and Loving It, where he played Renfield?
I remember, we actually watched it together at one point. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure you made us all be quiet and really watch and pay attention to the scene where he starts doing the, like, and now I'll lose him. And
yes,
jumping.
That movie is not great, as unfortunately some of the latter day Mel Brooks films are not. Mm. But the bit where he decides to throw off pursuit is amazing. I wish it was three times as long. So, those listening, find Dracula Dead and Loving It. Skip 2, time code. No, I don't know.
It's... I know you've got it tattooed somewhere. You just don't want to take your pants off to...
See, this is creepy when his eyes light up.
Yeah!
I do. One of the criticisms that I've... Because I kind of read some various stuff and talked to some people who said they didn't like this movie and why they didn't like it.
Well,
in preparation for our, you know, somewhat, benevolent watch of this film.
Yeah.
One of the criticisms that people have is that a lot of the supernatural things don't look scary.
Yeah.
And I think, like, the slime hands and that bit with the eyes and everything with the painting is creepy until the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But one of the big complaints is this scene where the ghosts manifest.
Yeah.
That they don't look like the ghosts from Ghostbuster 1. They look like cartoon ghosts, like closer to Slimer.
Mm-mm-mm.
You know? And I was like, I... I get what you're laying down. I don't know if I 100% agree.
Well,
but I see it as a fair criticism.
I did do some research.
Oh shit! Here we go.
AKA read the trivia page like last week.
Okay,
and there, you know, that's actually one of the things that's kind of brought up is, much like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, there was an active push by like the studio and I guess the makers of the film to tone things down on the spooky side or violent side and make it much more kid-friendly. And the reason, because at this point, I mean, even though for a cartoon, the real Ghostbusters cartoon was pretty freaky, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. We just ran past the great Rick Moranis line. One time I turned into a dog and they helped me. Short but pointless. Yeah.
It's a great line. And just the reaction shot of, that doesn't help.
Oh, great shot of the mood slime.
Ooh, and you know what? Mood slime. I'm thinking about it like the ring in the Lord of the Rings movies. There's lots of shots of just slime looking kind of evil.
Yeah. Like not as much as the ring in the Lord of the Rings film.
Well, you know, I mean,
but nothing could be.
You could argue the slime is not as important as the one ring to rule them all. It's possibly not as embedded in the popular culture mythos of what the ghost genre means as compared to, you know, the ring is almost the embodiment of all fantasy ever.
Interesting note. Con Ed, I didn't know what that was for a really long time. That's the power company.
I think that took me a while too.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's one of those New York things.
Yeah.
That I didn't know as a kid.
Yeah. But yeah. So because the cartoon was so popular, they thought like if we make this movie as scary as the first one, which kids loved anyway,
yeah,
it would be too intense for kids. So they made the let's tone everything down and make things a bit more cartoony and a bit more.
Gotcha. Yeah. Which this scene is probably the most egregious on that offense.
Yeah.
Your witness.
And
Rick Moranis doesn't do movies anymore.
No, he retired a while ago.
Just doesn't. And it makes me sad. I'm like, but you're so good at making movies. Why don't you?
And he was like, I kind of want to just be with my family, and I'm tired of. What
I have so much, I have so much money, I don't know what to do with it. So yeah,
they kept.
There's no incentive for me to do that.
So. And I think I read an interview with him where he's like, "Yeah, people just kept on offering me scripts to basically do the exact same stuff I've been doing," and I just, you know, and I think he kind of said like he's retired unless someone offers him something that he thinks would be great to do.
Yeah, maybe he'll have like a resurgence. Like he'll come back. To grace us. I'll send him my screenplay.
So, like, maybe Rick Moranis and Joe Pesci can, like, team up.
And just someone has to deal with it. And who are you going to call?
Yeah.
I think that was in the trailer. That was the trailer line from this movie.
Who are you going to call? That judge is so angry. I hope that doesn't have a negative effect.
It's interesting to me that Winston isn't in this part of the movie at all after the first. I wonder what that's about.
Especially because they introduced him in that scene with Ray. You'd think they would have.
I don't know. And then he just kind of shows up out of the blue once they move on to the next section of the movie. Hey, I'm back, guys. Whatever. I'm here now.
Uh-oh. It's getting. And I like how there's wind going on, too. Just for no reason. Just the slime's bubbling, so it's windy. There you go. And the wind doesn't seem to be blowing at the judge.
See, as a kid, I thought these ghosts were pretty creepy.
Yeah.
But they are super cartoony.
They are really cartoony. They seem... you know, they're really cartoony. I was about to say, like, yeah, they seem more like cartoons, which kind of... But like Tom and Jerry type cartoony, you know?
Like, I think their designs are good, but yeah, they're just big cartoons.
I don't know. Like, they seem... The design to me is kind of like that thing of like, well, we can't have them be too scary, but we want them to look scary even though they can't be scary. So, mm-hmm. How can we make the design like almost like a Rat Fink cartoon thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, this whole scene, it almost, rather than being something in Ghostbusters, this scene does kind of feel more like it should be like Porky's or, you know, Revenge of the Nerds or some type of little, like, whoa!
Yeah, it feels out of place with the rest of the film, I will say. It's like, we needed a reason, an excuse for them to suit up, you know, and do their Ghostbuster thing.
Yeah.
And I guess it's economical to have them, like, they're on trial, so at the trial, they have to do their thing, and...
Yeah, I don't think the setup is bad. I think there is something a little bit about the tone.
Mm-hmm.
That, like... Yeah, like that joke. Like that joke right there.
I think it pays to remember that Harold Ramis probably wrote all these punchlines for himself.
Yeah.
I will get the best line because I wrote the script. Deal with it.
And it's kind of like, I'm not sure if that really counts as the best line. Like if this whole scene had kind of been a little darker and a little less over the top up to now, this would be really kind of freaky looking. Like, because the chairs popping up like that looks great.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think one of the problems is admittedly they're out of practice, but this is also kind of set up, you know, probably with the three of them, and this could explain the absence of Winston as well, is this is set up to kind of mirror the scene in the hotel in the first movie, where right. It's the three of them kind of not knowing what they're doing. But we had that whole kind of first movie that just kind of sets them up in a way as like, blue-collar badasses when it comes to busting ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And here, they're bat more into, like, befuddled stage.
Yeah, they're just destroying everything.
Yeah. So it's
kind of... I mean, maybe we're being a little too nitpicky.
Maybe. You're right. We're watching this for the good of it. But, you know...
I mean, like I said, I do like they have that moment where they're like, yeah, we got our packs again.
Yeah.
You know, like, fish eater. I never caught that line before. It's interesting watching a film with the subtitles on.
Yeah.
It's a really weird insult.
You fish eater, you. I kind of like the score, though. Like, the background score to it. Like, mm-hmm. Bombastic.
All the catchphrases. Yeah, this is like beat for beat the same as the hotel scene from.
Yeah.
It's like a really shortened version of the hotel scene, and now we go to a really shortened version of the aftermath of the hotel scene from the first movie. Where all of a sudden we're back and we're doing all these things and then of course at least they gave Winston a call,
and for some reason he's doing the two because. Now, I had the soundtrack. I listened to this song a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know. I actually checked if they had the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack for like the Apple Music thing. And they do, but they don't have all the songs. It's like some of the songs they just couldn't get the rights to or whatever.
Weird.
So, yeah.
See, and then you have this scene... where this ghost looks like the ghost from the first movie. He's just a dude.
Yeah. And see, this is I love that little thing right there where he's running, he just triggers the trap. Like, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I
love all their fake commercials, all their terrible commercials.
Oh, they're great.
It's that darn ghost again. He just won't leave us alone.
By the way, Janine, her movie design, character design... was also changed to more be in line with the cartoon.
Interesting.
Yeah. And also, like the movie number one, I believe it's this montage was made up of a lot of scenes that were filmed to be more featured in the movie, but then kind of cut out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I really like their more grayish jumpsuits, by the way.
Yeah, like I like their gray jumpsuits. They're like, no, we're not screwing around.
Yeah,
I love that bit in the jewelry store they just did.
Mm. Yeah,
Slimer. Gotta have Slimer back. Kids like Slimer.
Yep.
Gotta have a reason. Ooh, gross. And by that I mean the payphone. Ooh. The past.
Why don't they just use their cell phones?
Exactly. Well, they put the merch for the movie in the movie.
And you know, I saw that, and I'm thinking right now, I would love a hot thermal mug with a balloon.
Is this the toaster scene?
Where we first get it dancing?
Yes, I love this scene so much.
I think more movies need people yelling at inanimate objects.
Yeah, I love it because it's just a cheap effect. They just have someone underneath a table
with
an air hose. Yeah, it's just like blow bubbles. That's all you're doing.
It's really good though.
Also, I never noticed before. There on the table is the spray canister that they use later.
Oh, huh.
That's kind of neat.
Yeah. That's really cool. Do you think it's in, like, prototype stage now? Like, they're thinking about it?
I think that would be the idea. They're like...
Kind of like we're in the background of Iron Man 1. You see that he's working on Captain America's shield. Mm-hmm. You know? It was there. I promise. Don't you take that tone with me.
You're not sleeping with it, are you, Ray?
Does that mean Egon's sleeping with it?
Yes, that's what we're left to assume.
Yeesh. Yeesh.
You hound. I just love that. I love this sequence of them like explaining how the stuff works and showing how it works.
Yeah.
It's just fun. It's fun.
No, it's great. I like them as like experimenters and kind of solving it down, you know? It's lots of fun. It could have used a bit more of this. You know what I kind of want now? I want a Ghostbusters live action TV show. Like an hour long drama where they have to kind of figure everything out. Like the Ghostbusters procedural.
I would love that.
Also, I had the like I said, I had the soundtrack on cassette. And the version of Higher and Higher on the cassette was not the Jackie Wilson version.
What?
Yeah, I remember being really flummoxed by that as a kid, being like, because I liked it, I was like, wow, this is fun, this is great, and then I was like, wait a minute, this sounds a little different from some of the stuff in the movie, and I forget who did it, but it was, yeah, someone else, and I was like, man, why would they make such a big deal out of it being Jackie Wilson?
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Was it like a sound-alike, or was it like just a totally different...
It was pretty much a sound alike. I think, like, I mean, it, you know, admittedly, it's been decades since I've heard it, but I want to say it probably had, like, slightly more 80s-ishness to it, but it was very much still a sound alike.
Interesting.
Like, you know, probably, well, like, the 80s drums.
That's really disappointing.
Yeah.
Bassmasters.
Yeah, Vigo's scary. I don't care who knows it. I like the idea that in this movie, there are people who probably like invited their family, like, hey, look, no, look, that's me in the back. You see that guy? That guy there, like, diligently restoring art. That's totally me. I mean, it always kind of, like, boggles the mind, doesn't it? Like, when they make these movies, there's someone in the background who took the, like, the elder black guy and the elder gray-haired woman and just, like, had to be like, okay, go now. Okay, go now. And then someone had to watch that, and then later on when they recreated it, like, because they're in two separate shots kind of going the same area, and they had to, like, make sure that lined up. Like, that's someone's job, to make sure someone in the back of the frame just walks through at roughly the same speed. There's some weird-ass jobs, is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all for our part one of Ghostbusters 2, but we'll be back next week to finish off this cinematic fantasticness. Thanks for listening. Bye. You call the-